Our next speaker is Renice Miller. She's a lifetime Harlem resident, a feminist, and a community activist. She's active in the struggle for reproductive rights and health care, and is also a member of the National Black Women's Health Project. Please welcome Renice.
Thank you. I'm going to focus on some of the things that Fran touched on, particularly the question of abortion versus genocide and its impact on our movement for liberation. But I first want to just mention and talk about one of the women, or a few of the women, that Fran talked about, and relate that to Malcolm and why he has always meant so much to me. Always, Malcolm lifted up the concept of the leadership of women. And there was never a point when you can find that he said that women should not be in leadership, to the point where the women who were in the leadership in the Southern Civil Rights Movement, who were not as well known up north, Malcolm was oftentimes a conduit for them to come up here and speak to various people across the country. And a couple of those women, Ella Baker, who Fran mentioned, and Annie Devine. Well, Annie Devine was a part of a movement in Mississippi, the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party. Annie Devine, Victoria Gray Adams, Fannie Lou Hamer, and a number of other sisters who actually changed the political course of this country based on the work that they did. This is the 25th year commemoration of that struggle of the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party and the Mississippi Challenge, and it was already celebrated in Jackson, Mississippi, and it's going to be celebrated in New York at Town Hall on November 27th. And I encourage folk to come so you can actually talk to and meet some of these sisters who are still alive, who are still some of my role models, and who, once you talk to them, you'll realize why the movement was as powerful as it was because of the women who were active in that movement and who were in leadership. I want to talk about specifically the issue of reproductive rights and abortion rights, and historically what that issue has been about in our community. Fran touched on a lot of it, and I actually want to hone in on a piece of that. But first I want to talk about, during the time of slavery, what sisters did, what black women did to try and protect themselves as much as they could from the abuses of white slave masters. There was a great deal of suicide, of infanticide, and of abortion methods practiced by women who were slaves, some of which they brought over from Africa, some of which they developed once they got here. But a lot of those measures were taken in response to a refusal to lie down and to be sexual slaves to white slave masters. And while you hear a lot about that, you know, women were basically used by the slave masters, were breeders, that's the role that we were thought of as during slavery. But there were a number of women also who were slaves who took proactive measures to release themselves from that bondage, some of which were as severe as taking their own lives, as opposed to being the whores of white slave masters. And that's something that you don't hear a lot about. It's not written a lot about. Angela Davis has written a lot about it, and Paula Giddings, if you want to do some more research on that point. So we see in our history, from as far back as the point when we first came to this country, that we have had a level of consciousness about our bodies and our lives and what it means to be independent and in control of our bodies. And even under some severe situations, such as bondage and slavery, we still exercise a measure of control, or try to exercise a measure of control over our bodies, jumping several hundred years to the 1800s and the development and flourishing of the birth control movement. Margaret Sanger, who a number of you have heard of, who is seen as the mother of the birth control movement in this country. Margaret Sanger has some very interesting politics. She started out as a socialist, and she had a very strong socialist underpinning, and then she got caught up in a movement that was going through this country, which was called white race suicide. And it's actually something that's resurging right now in this country. And basically what that is that there were so many people of color who were here for a number of imperialist reasons, one being slavery, others being bringing other people of country from their countries here to work as workers, as slave, paid slave labor, that we then had a growing population of people of color. Well, those people of color were reproducing. Our communities were growing, not only in the South, but all over the country. And white folks stood back and said, well, this is not good. this is not good. If we keep going like this, there'll be a point in time when there'll be more people of color and more immigrants, and they also did not like other white people from other parts of the world. They didn't care too much for them either. That there'll be more of them here than there'll be of us being dominant, the dominant white society. So Teddy Roosevelt, actually, in his State of the Union address in his second year as president, actually gave a whole speech about what white women need to do to reproduce so that there can be more white people in this country. We cannot let people of color outstrip us, after all, in terms of reproduction. And that movement actually gained a lot of momentum, and Teddy Roosevelt and a number of other people were its main proponents. Well, Margaret Sanger, at a certain point in her political development, decided to take up those issues, that actually what she really meant when she was calling for birth control was not actually about the liberation of women to control their own bodies, but was actually about people of color and poor people limiting their reproduction so that white women would continue to reproduce so that there would be no leveling off or equating of our populations in this country. And she actually gave a speech where she gave a speech and she handed out the speech where she called for more children from the fit and less from the unfit, and you, of course, know who the unfit was. Margaret Sanger then went on to really, really work strongly around the issue of birth control in this country. She founded the Planned Parenthood movement, Planned Parenthood clinics, and their actual foundation and philosophical and political basis was birth control based on eugenicists, that certain persons in the population should be limited, and they should be limited from some legal form of birth control, limiting the level of reproduction of those persons. And so now when we still need to have this discussion with Sister Faye, but now when we struggle and fight around Planned Parenthood, and there are some very legitimate struggles that Planned Parenthood is engaged in, they still have not fundamentally dealt with the question of their historical basis and what their relationship is to people of color. That question has still not been addressed by Planned Parenthood. So while we're all caught up in the movement for some struggles to maintain some things that we really need, we also need to still have that discussion, which we never have 150 years later. The modern women's rights, reproductive rights movement, and by that I mean the mainstream women, white women's reproductive rights, women's rights movement, took a lot of leads from Margaret Sanger and the Planned Parenthood and the birth control movement, which led to some very strong positions around the right to safe and legal abortion. And most of their politics come from the movement that formed Planned Parenthood. They lift Margaret Sanger up as a patron saint, which on some level she is. It's just not for women of color. And many of the mistakes that were made by Margaret Sanger and those whom she worked with, and there were a host of women, white suffragists and others who were really strong in that movement, many of the mistakes that were created by that movement were repeated by the white women's liberation reproductive rights movement in the 50s, 60s, and 70s in this country. And primarily, the issue that was not dealt with, that still has not been dealt with, and is the issue that we are struggling around today in 1990, is questions of classism and racism profoundly underscore what their movements were about. You will see a lot of discussion and a lot of the reading around the development of the abortion rights movement, of discussions of women having control of their own bodies so that they can go into the workforce and go into academia and move up the ladder without the burden of having large families that they are primarily responsible for. And that for a lot of white women, that was a very, very critical question. But it's a totally different question for poor women and for women of color. The issue was not access to academia. We were fighting over some very, very basic things like being respected as human beings, having access to some decent quality of life issues, and issues of job access or moving up the job rung in corporate America, or having access to professorships or tenureships was just not a question that we were struggling around. And for some of us, it's still not a question that we're struggling around. So those issues, as they emerged in the 60s, continued to grow, continued to be the underpinning of the mainstream abortion rights movement, but never addressed some very, very specific and fundamental questions for women of color, particularly African American and Latina Native American women. Never were those questions talked about. Never were they profoundly discussed. It's not as if there were these major discussions and they were put on the back burner. They were just not discussed. And so as that movement continued to grow, they still left out the large majority of women who needed those services, who needed that level of relief from safe and legal abortion, that our voices were not in that movement. So as they continue to advocate for a safe and legal abortion, what we see, as Fran mentioned, is that the majority of women in this country who died from botched, unsafe, illegal abortions were African American and Latina women, primarily. Overwhelmingly, it's not an issue that can be debated by anybody. Even their own statistics verify those numbers. And in New York City, before 1970, and abortion was legalized in 1973, nationally in 1971 in New York, before 1970, 80% of the women who died from botched and illegal abortions in this city were African American and Latina women. And that is, we're talking thousands of women. We're not talking 20, 30, 40 women. We're talking thousands of sisters who died before abortion was safe and legal. People had a lot of reasons and a lot of needs to seek out abortion as a means of terminating pregnancies, and those issues have not fully been discussed in our own communities, but yet the need and the motivation to have abortion was there, was always there, and was always sought out. And I'm talking a period of many, many years ago, 50 years ago, 60 years ago, women were practicing or trying to practice methods of safe of self-abortion, or were going to abortionists in their local communities who would perform sometimes safe and sometimes not safe abortion. But the situations of desperation that women often found themselves in forced them to have to look to these measures, to abortionists in their local communities who would perform sometimes safe and sometimes not safe abortion. But the situations of desperation that women often found themselves in forced them to have to look to these measures to terminate pregnancies. We have not fully had this discussion, and I don't think that the time is here for us to fully have that discussion. But in the African American and Latino community, we need to have some fundamental discussion about what women have gone through to exercise their full reproductive rights in this country. And people should know that even though abortion is legal, women of color and poor women do not have full reproductive rights, have never had full reproductive rights to determine what we should do with our bodies and when we should do them with our bodies. We have now gone through some political struggles in this country about maintaining self and legal abortion. We still have not had this discussion about its impact, about the cessation of federal funding for abortion for poor women or women who receive aid to family with dependent children or any kind of federal funding along those lines. That case was very, very important to women of color, because most of the women of color in this country are poor and at some point intersect with the federal government in terms of some source of support. So when that issue started raging, the mainstream white women's reproductive rights movement did not address to in any strong, organized way what was happening. And women of color then began to really reflect on this and say, well, wait a minute. Now, we're still logged and launched in this deadly grip over control of ourselves and our lives, and our white sisters will not take up the questions that are specific to us. That sterilization abuse may not be something that primarily impacts on women of color, on white women, but nevertheless it's something that they need to speak out about. If it's a movement that talks about reproductive rights, then it's reproductive rights for everybody, not just for white women. And as we started to struggle along these issues, we realized that we were not getting a whole lot of support from this side of the arena. Not only were we not getting a whole lot of support, but they wouldn't even say the phrase sterilization abuse. They wouldn't even acknowledge, for the most part, that it was happening. And I'm not making a general castigation of every white woman, because there are a number of white sisters who have had a very broad consciousness, and some of them have done some of the leading work in some of these areas, but the mainstream movement at large have not, will not, and continue to refuse to address these questions. So we found ourselves struggling by ourselves, and we found ourselves having to address these issues in a very right-wing context. And we found that we were out there by ourselves, and that to struggle around the issue of abortion rights is not the only struggle that we have. It's not the only thing that women of color have to struggle for. And so what has happened in the last 5 to 10 years is that among women of color have grown a movement of reproductive rights that talks about expanding and refocusing and reshaping the definition of reproductive rights and what does that mean. And it means also the right to have children, the right to bear children in a safe and healthy environment, the right to have access to health care, to prenatal care, to postnatal care, the right to have a hospital, for crying out loud. Some of our communities are struggling around a hospital. Where would we go if we were sick? Where would we go? And in Harlem, that's becoming, in other parts of New York City, but particularly in Harlem, which I know the best since that's where I live, that's becoming a real serious question because we're now down to 2 hospitals and they want to close one. So it's a very serious question for women across this country, particularly poor women and women of color, whose major source of health care is usually at public-funded facilities. Public-funded facilities is an issue that we're struggling around. Where is the mainstream reproductive rights movement over access to health care? They're not clear. They're not clear about the intersection of these issues, and so it becomes incumbent upon us to make them clear about these issues. And it, you know, we have oftentimes been in, we have always been in the leadership of our own movements, but now it's time for us to be in the leadership of this broader movement so people can get focused about what we really need to struggle around. And so, in trying to wrap up, there are a couple points that I just want to touch on. And one is, again, this question of genocide versus abortion, which is something that looms very large for me because it seems to be raising its head again in our communities. It really seems to be an issue that's taking hold at the same time that we're struggling over continuing to keep abortion safe and legal. We're struggling over whether many of our brothers, quote unquote, think it's something that we should even be accessing. Well, on this question of genocide versus abortion, and I hope this puts it in the proper context, that the number of women who died from unsafe, illegal abortions far outstretches and outpaces any possible thing that brothers could be thinking about or anybody else could be thinking about in terms of our stopping the growth of our nation, if you will. If the women die, there will be no nation, period. End of discussion. And so I hope that folks continue to talk about that. I hope that people continue to have some real serious dialogue around that issue because oftentimes what gets left out of the discussion and debate is what happens to women. What have women's struggles been? What have we had to fight for to exercise control over our lives? This struggle is by no means not over. We are actually just gearing up again for the second round. Now all reactionary white men have decided that we have no rights at all. Not just that we as people don't have any rights, but particularly that we as women have no rights that they are bound to respect. So every term the Supreme Court decides they're going to cut off another piece of our body, every single term we go through this, whether it's the right to a job, the right to a safe and legal abortion, the right to health care, the right to education, whatever it is, or the right not to be executed as a minor, these issues keep coming up before the Supreme Court, and these people keep deciding that, well, the first group of people who are expendable is those people of color, because for God's sake, after all, by the year 2000, there'll be a majority of the population, and we don't want that. So we need to go back to Teddy Roosevelt's theme and, you know, and deal with this white race suicide question. And it has come up again, and we are dealing with it right now. How can we work together with our brothers in terms of building our nation, building our communities, rebuilding our communities? The first thing we need to do is have some honest dialogue, some very, very honest dialogue, and some dialogue that starts from the position of mutual respect and care and love. I think that when we say that we're feminists, and I do say that I'm a feminist, and I'm also a nationalist, and I'm very, very proud to be that and to live my life that way, that does not mean that I hate all black men. It just doesn't mean that, okay? It just doesn't mean that. And that whatever problems that people have around terminologies, if the problem is terminology and classification and title, then take all of that out of the discussion. If the word feminist gives people the willies, then take it out of the discussion and say, I'm about the right of women to control their lives and their bodies and our communities, our children, and every institution in our community. That's what I'm about. And that's what everybody is about if they're all about liberation of our people and our community. So we need to have some honest dialogue. We need to continue to do this kind of dialoguing. We need to have a conference simply on the issue of the liberation of our people, women and men, and what are our issues and how do we intersect. That's a conference unto itself, and we need to have that. Thank you. Thank you.